In this session, Vernay Myers, a nationally recognized expert and author of Moving Diversity Forward, will teach us how to go from well-meaning to well-doing in our efforts to communicate inclusively. From race to gender and generation, Ms. Myers brings a wealth of knowledge about effective communication strategies. Her accomplishments are extensive. Verna Myers, Esquire, is principal of Verna Myers Consulting Group and a nationally recognized expert on diversity and inclusion within law firms, law departments, and law schools. She's a dynamic speaker and creative advisor who supports creating inclusive environments and improving the recruitment, retention, and advancement of underrepresented groups. She's a highly sought-after speaker at conferences worldwide, but she also sponsors her own successful annual Opus conference on race and ethnicity in large law firms. As I mentioned, she's the author of Moving Diversity Forward, How to Go from Well-Meaning to Well-Doing, which was published by the ABA, American Bar Association, in 2011. And her second book, What If I Say the Wrong Thing, will be published in spring of 2014, correct?
Oh, it's actually here.
Oh, wonderful.
You can buy
That's
it.
Right.
Oh, you already bought it. Thank you very much. Very good. It'll be available at 11 o'clock.
That's right.
Or before.
She'll be available at the exhibit
I'll
hall.
I'll be signing.
At 11 o'clock. So for meet and greet and signing of the books.
And it's not hard to carry around.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
I love you. Can we pay you later?
I could go on and on about the many accomplishments here. And I will hit a variety of them.
You don't have to.
Oh, she's very accomplished. I'm sure it's probably in the program. But she served, in addition to all of her many awards and recognition with her diversity work, she also served as Deputy Chief of Staff for the Attorney General of Massachusetts from 1997 to 1999. She practiced corporate and real estate law in Boston for 6 years, graduated magna cum laude from Barnard College, Columbia University, and Harvard Law School. Accomplishments themselves. And she also, I think this is interesting, maybe she'll speak about it a little bit, but she was the first executive director of the Boston Law Firm Group, a consortium of firms committed to increasing racial and ethnic diversity among law firms. With that, I will be honored to introduce Ms. Vernay Myers. And once again, a reminder to everybody who just joined, please turn your cell phone ringers off. Vernay, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I actually have a mic. Thank you so much. It's so good to actually see your faces. You know, it's kind of weird up there on that stage because I could see some people, but I couldn't see everybody. And I like seeing people. So thank you so much for coming. It's so nice when people come to see you, you know, because you have this big room. You're like, oh, I hope some people show up. So I'm really thrilled. And I would love for us to just have a conversation. And also, I have these slides prepared, the tyranny of the slides. So what I'm going to ask you to do and is to place it. I love the concept of standing room only, but there are some chairs in here. So if you have a chair beside you, this is also what we do in the Black church. If you have a chair beside you, please remove your wrap and invite people up, okay? So there are some chairs up here. I'm also echoing, so I'm wondering if my sound guys want to turn that off. Thank you. Okay, so here's what I want to try to do, and I'm going to ask you to raise your hand, interrupt, call out, do whatever you want to do to get my attention, because it's actually more important that I answer what's on the top of your mind. Does everybody remember we do have a cone of no shame going on right now? Okay, all right. So you can say crazy stuff, and everyone will agree not to hate you. Okay, so everybody just get your love on right now, all right? So I want to go by three concepts. I want to break down very quickly, again, what diversity is, what inclusion is, and then also this idea of what communication is, because what I'm going to try to do is to talk to you about what this means when we're talking to one another. And then one of the things that I want to share with you is what I meant by bias when I was talking about it. I want to go a little bit more into that, and I also want to talk about culture as two important habits. Now, in the book that I wrote, there are 25 habits. You will not get all 25 habits right now. So I'm going to try to give you what I have. Let me just start by saying, what if I say the wrong thing? Basic. Apologize. Is everybody right? Okay with that? Now, let me tell you what apology does not sound like. Apology is not, but that's not what I meant. Is everybody clear about that? okay? I can get with your intent. A friend of mine told me this. He's like, suppose after, you know, listening to me talk, you know, you guys love me. In fact, there's somebody on Twitter who's already like, I'm in love with you right now. So I'm all good with that. Now say that, you know, you're outside and that person sees me and they get all flustered and discombobulated and they're in their car and they really want to get out of the car and come and hug me. But by mistake, they put their car in reverse and run over me. Okay, that's scenario one. Scenario two is somebody who has been at this conference was like, you know what, I cannot stand her, right? And they are outside and they are in their car and they see me and like, this is a chance to get rid of one more diversity person. And they purposefully put their car in reverse and run me over. Let us visit what has happened to me in both scenarios. It's not good. It's not good. I'm on the floor. I'm hurting. I'm bleeding or whatever. If you are from scenario A and you loved me and that's why you ran over me, I'm actually not as interested in hearing that. Do you know what I'm saying? For you to stand over me like, but I love you. And that is, I love you. Then I got flustered. And then it was like, but I'm like, I can hear that after you say, I'm sorry. I see you are bleeding. How can I help you? Then I'm all interested in your intent. This is the difference between intent and impact. And if you're going to be good at communicating across difference, you've got to be as interested in your impact as you are in your intent. We spend a lot of time pleading our intent without any willingness to go into the harder part, which is what's the impact of my action, my behavior, my words on you as a person. So I just want to say free of charge, what if I say the wrong thing? Learn to apologize. Learn not to be so invested in your own sense of self that you can't apologize. And look, I'm not telling you something that is easy for me. I also have the struggle, but because I teach it, I remember what to do even when I don't want to do it. The other thing is to allow people to tell you what the impact was and make it easy for them. You're like, I'm really sorry. That's not making it easy for them. Or, oh, sorry. No, none of those things. Invite people to tell you what the problem was, but something like, you know what, can you work with me? I'm sorry. Doesn't that feel different? I'm trying to figure this out. I would love to hear what you think. Or there are other ways to do it. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about those things. Seriously, I feel like, okay, one more time. Is there a seat beside you that's empty? If so, raise your hand. Okay. Everybody come who wants to see. Wants to see. Anybody? Okay, so let me go quickly through the definitions because I think you know them. One is diversity is not just about the commonalities, but also about the differences. Okay, it's all right. We can do both of those things in the same vein. They are both true and powerful. The second thing is that there are some general buckets, right? There's sort of experience is a bucket, culture is a bucket, identity is a bucket, as we sort of think about diversity. But diversity is more than what lots of people have started to talk about, which is more about what I would say the tip of the iceberg. It's sort of what we can see. And it's often protected classes. Sometimes it's about, you know, historical. I still have an echo. Sometimes it's about historical marginalization, underrepresentation. Bottom line is, pretty much it's sort of social groups and experience. All very important. But if we decide that diversity is only about the tip of the iceberg, we really miss a lot, right? So a lot of what I'm going to be talking to, and one of the things that kind of causes us to make a mistake is we don't recognize that everybody is more than what we can see, right? So that we are a composite of a lot of different identities and experiences and cultures, and that makes us quite unique. What about that Jenny girl? Was she hilarious or what? She's like, and no one is as weird as you are. You are uniquely messed up. I was like, that is a perspective right there. I love that. Love that girl. Anyway, all of us are uniquely perfect. And we come from all these different backgrounds. So I'm looking at you, lovely. What's your name? Barbara. I'm looking at Barbara. Now, if I were honest, I would say, Barbara, I've got some things I'm thinking about you. I'm just saying. I'm going with woman. Just tell me if I'm right, woman, okay. I'm going with Caucasian, white, European something history. Okay, good, still good. I'm going with 30s. Ooh! All good. But the bottom line is, like, seriously, why are we really pretending that we don't see difference? The problem is not that we see difference. It's what we do with the difference we see. That's the problem. And so what I want us to do is to think very deeply and broadly about the concept of diversity. I want us to be thinking about multidimensionality. Because if you decide that a person is one thing, you either like that one thing or you don't. I just saw, like, fabulous chivalry just happened, where a man got up and to give up his seat. I'm watching that. That's lovely. Thank you so much. I mean, not all guys don't all have to get up. I'm just saying that was a nice thing. So here's the thing. The difference, as I mentioned, is this concept, which is the story of bringing people in who haven't been in an organization and then expecting them to fit in. And I, you know, didn't have time to say this as much on the stage, but what I mean is when I'm talking about cultivating, I'm saying that you are not asking the gay people to be the straightest they could be, right? You're not looking for the black people to be the whitest they can be. You're not looking for a woman to channel a man. Inclusion is saying, oh, we've been missing all of this. Please come in and help us expand who we are. But so much of it is that we want difference, but we don't want to be different. So a lot of my clients are like, oh, we love the people. Bring in the Asian people. Bring in the disability people with disability. We love them. I'm like, well, seriously, because you can't go to that restaurant anymore. I don't see how you can go to that club anymore because A, it's not handicap access, and B, it doesn't really like women. So, but that's the club we've always gone to. But my son did the blend, did the fit, right? I mean, they're all good reasons, except if you truly believe in inclusion, how in the world are you going to have change without changing? And with cultural conversations, we have to believe that because we hang out with ourselves, that we've got a nice fluency with ourselves. But the minute we start doing what I'm asking you all to do, which is to expand your social and professional circles, we have to pay attention to what we're saying. And they're like, oh, Miss Diversity Lady, you're taking all the fun out of everything. Now we have to be conscious about everything we say. Look, let me say, it's true that maybe you're not as funny as you used to be. I mean, it actually was never funny. It was just funny because the people who you were making jokes about weren't there, but now they are. So, and you know what? You didn't even know you were, I mean, I'm guilty of this, but sometimes I'll be like, oh, you know, I'm so broke. Well, seriously, are you gonna say that in front of everybody? I mean, people who don't have a job, people don't have a house, people who's barely making it, people who don't have insurance, you know, just like, I'm so broke. I'm so old. What about that? You're saying that in front of, like, people who are, like, 80 years old. And they just roll their eyes because they don't have the energy to mess with you at this point. Here's the thing. I sort of think about this. You know, it's so funny that Jenny went back to high school because I'm going to take you back to middle school. I don't know if I should. It's not really nice. I mean, some of you may have had a good middle school thing, but it's a little cumbersome. It's a little clumsy. It's a little ugly. I thought about this when I saw this is a middle school dance. Can you see that? It's hard to see because, you see, I wish you could dim. Can we dim the lights? Anybody over there who's near the light or near the lights? This is sort of like we have, do you remember middle school dance? The girls are a little awkwardly larger than the boys. And if you could see this, you would see that there are about three or four boys, they're out in the middle, and they are dancing. You see that? And then you see those women out there just wishing to get in, hoping they're gonna get in. Like, ooh, I hope he asked me to dance. And I don't know when how old you are, or what time you were in middle school. I don't know what song was popular. Okay, maybe it was this. I don't know. But this Thank you. You can bring the lights up. This is what I see. I see people who've been invited to the party, but they are hanging out on the sides. They are hoping against hope that someone is going to invite them in, that someone knows how to speak with them to them with respect, that they are actually going to get opportunities and that they're going to get a chance to show what they're made of. And really, it depends on who you are and what your role is in any organization or in the community or in your corporation. But are you the host? Because if you're the host, you need to think about what the music is. You need to see whether people are in the middle of the dance floor or whether they're just hanging out on the sides of your organization or your community or your neighborhood so that you can count them. But are they being cultivated? Are they staying? Are they productive? Do they want to share? You're like, well, I ask people if they have any thoughts. Do they have any thoughts? Yeah, but how do you ask them? Do you say, I did it really quickly and no one said anything? You know, I go into these executive committee meetings and people, I said, well, I'm going to present. That's the most participation we've ever had in these meetings. And I said, well, what do people do? And it's like the main guy gets up and he says his thing and he asks, is there any questions? And people are like, no, and then we go off. So a lot about it is like, what's the culture saying about whether you can actually ask a question, right? And that sometimes is the unknown. So this is what I showed you this morning. Diversity is being invited to the party, but inclusion is being asked to dance. And what I'm talking about is this idea of feeling welcome, feeling integrated, being solicited, you know, your views are being solicited, and you feel that you have equal access and opportunity. That's what we're going for when we're talking about communication. So this cartoon I love because it's two men, they're looking at four women, and one says to the other, which one do you suppose is the alpha? So they're looking at women and trying to find the man. This is what we see more and more. So how does that person act? How does that person talk? You've said it, in which case it's a zone of no shame. you know, you need to get the octave of your voice down a little lower. You don't sound like somebody who I can trust. You don't sound like somebody who can lead this matter. This is like when we talk about fitting in and assimilation, this is the worst because if I'm trying, and how many people have gotten their voices down low just for that of trying to do that, right? Right. And you know what? You can do it. But what of it is robbing you of who you are? Just a question, right? And why can't we learn to hear power in different octaves is the real question. That's the work. Now, when we talk about what communication is, it's important to recognize that it's a two-way street. So more and more, my work is not to say these people have the problem and these people are the great people and these people are the difficult people. I'm really sort of saying this is two ways. And I'm going to talk to you more about what I see on both sides of the equation. But when you understand communication, you understand that it's encoding and decoding. So somebody's sending a message and someone's receiving that message. And when the message is sent, it's got to go through a whole bunch of different filters. Personal history, worldview, self-identity and image, current life context, you know, how you talk in certain places, how you're going to talk here today with people is very different than, you know, if you're just hanging out with your friends or if you're with your supervisor. And so what's happening is the individual who is speaking has a whole set of filters. And they're sending their particular remark through that over to a person who is going to receive it. And that's going to be a whole bunch of filters. So you're like, okay, well, Mr. Diversity, I can't do anything about that person. I don't know. The fact that somebody else said that to them wrong, that's not my fault. Now they're all acting crazy. I don't see how that's appropriate. It's not professional. Okay, so it's true. You cannot do anything about how someone receives, but you can be aware of the ways that messages are received. So most of you know these percentages, but only 7% of what we are saying is sort of about how we're being interpreted is about what we say with words. A huge percentage is the face. right? And the gestures and the posture. And then we also have a good percentage of it, which is the tone of voice and the inflection, which is why email communication gets all crazy, right? That's why we keep using those exclamation points. Okay, seriously. Is everything an exclamation point? I know, I'm usually like, hi, do you think you could do this differently? You know, like that's how we do the emails now. And we put the little emoticons and the smiley faces because we're like, you know, I gotta get the tone. How do we get the tone right? But a lot of it is not your words, it's how you're saying it. And believe me, when you are trying to be nice, but it's not authentic, people can pretty much perceive it. So you're like, hi, I'm so glad you're here. You're in an interview. I'm so glad you're here. And you look, this person has her head wrapped. And you're like, in the back of you, you're like, I don't know what that means. Am I supposed to say something? I'm not supposed to say something. You know, you're doing this whole thing in the back of your head. And I don't mean to pick on any group. I'm saying that's a visual thing, cue that causes people. They're like, hi. But inside, they're like, Oh, shoot. Oh, shoot, now what do I say? You know, this person has a, I love
Jenny talking about that clipped earring in her nose.
Recently, if someone came in with that clipped earring, you'd be like, it's so nice to meet you, what is all of your news? So all of this is part of it. So here's how it goes down in the corporate environment. Rose is a new Latina junior executive, was at lunch, with Nora, a white VP, and Simon, a white influential senior executive in her department. Nora, Rose's mentor, thought it might be helpful for Rose's career to get to know Simon. At some point during the lunch, Simon leans over to Rose and said, you're a real asset to our department. You're a twofer. If only you were like a lesbian, that would be even better. Okay, talk to your neighbor. Tell me what's happening here. What's Simon trying to do, and what's the potential impact on Rose and also on Nora? So have a conversation. You got two minutes to do it. Okay. All right, I know you're not dumb, but you've definitely got it going, so I want to hear what you're saying. All right, so can anybody explain Simon to me? Just stand up and tell me what you got for Simon. Why does Simon say what he says? Yes. Yes. Good. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yep. Yes. Good. Well said. Well said. Anybody add a little something else for Simon? Yes. No. Actually, ouch. That's ouch for Rose. Ouch. Okay. Seriously. Will Rose actually ouch in that place? No. No. What will she say? All right, so this is a whole nother workshop, but I want to hear a Rose who has gone to the women's conference and has had and set through some things and is feeling powerful. Okay, and understands also the shame and all that, you know, no shame at all. Okay, somebody who's a Rose, tell me what you could say in that situation. Thank you. You're so lucky to have me. And he's like, are you interested in being a lesbian? No. I like that because at least you're asserting yourself. Anybody else? What else would you say? Beautiful. Did you take my other course? No, fabulous, fabulous. What do you mean by that? Actually, asking a question like, what do you mean by that? And not, we talked about tone, not, what do you mean by that? That's, okay. What do you mean by that is gets people to keep having a conversation with you. And it causes them to perhaps reflect, oh, shoot. What did I just say? And what do I mean? Right? Because all of us are talking and we don't necessarily remember what we mean, or we've just got things rolling out of our mouths. And so this is called interrupting. Interrupting bias. You're not trying to change Simon. You're not trying to school Simon. Way too much energy. Way too much energy. And it may or may not work. I don't know. I don't know Simon. I don't think any of us get to decide whether Simon is capable of changing, because all sorts of people change at any time in their lives. It's all right. But that's not your job. Your job is just to interrupt and deflect some of the pain point off of you. What else could Rose say? Yes. Yes. Beg you. Go ahead. Go ahead. Can you repeat what you said? You know, sometimes what I do is I just go. Or sometimes my son taught me, awkward, awkward, which is sort of like ouch, right? Or one person told me that a man had come to see me do a course, and then I mentioned to him that I knew this particular woman who works for him, and so he went back to her, and she's part Chinese, part white, and French or something like that, and he went back to her and he said, oh, you know, I met this woman, Verna, and then he proceeded to make like a joke about my name, and she's like, seriously, really, because you know we're friends, like, why are you joking about her name, a diversity consultant, anyway, but then he said, you know, I feel excluded. You know, I feel like I'm the one, he was a white man, I feel, you know, the head of her firm. I feel excluded. And she goes, what? And he said, you know, you get to go to all those Chinese things and all those women things. What do I get to do? Where do I get to go? And she's like, I was just stunned. She's like, she was like, what are you saying? Like, are you not going to give me money? She's like, this is what she was like, are you, because you actually give money for those events that I go to. Maybe you're saying you're not going to take them back or whatever. People are feeling, as things shift, people start to feel lost. They start to have fear. They start to notice that there's going to be real competition. They start to worry. And I understand Simon is new. I mean, this is new to him. And he is actually, best case scenario, he's trying to welcome her. He's trying to be a good guy. And he just needs more skills. He needs more awareness, and he needs to understand the impact, because the impact on Rose is, quite frankly, Rose has probably heard these absurd things before, right? So she's going to roll it off, except all the things we think we're rolling off, yeah, they're still there. They're still there. And what it means is, when she's trying to decide, am I going to fit in? Am I going to be able to be good here? Am I going to be seen as Rose rather than a twofer? If someone comes and asks me for a different opportunity or to go somewhere else or to get out of his department or go, I actually might go, especially depending on who he is. Meanwhile, my girl, Nora, she's just like, why did I even arrange this? And she's probably also, I've been working with him so much. And now, you know, and then, or she's the apologetic one. Don't worry, he always talks to everyone like that. You know, it's just that one. I'm sorry, we've all been apologetic. Yes. Yes, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. So how do you go to Simon, do you think? Or is that what you're asking? How do you go to Simon? Or how do you go to Nora? I mean, or how do you go to Rose? Yes. 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 So here's the thing that I think works really, really well, but it, you know, again, you've got to practice. Oh, by the way, and it's a perfect time to be practicing. This is in the book, too, which is called, you know, If You See Something, Say Something. So this is the idea that many of us are in positions of what I would call advantage in certain situations where we can use our advantage to make some progress here. So Rose, even though she's a woman, and could feel the outrage. She's not Latina. I didn't make her in my mind Latina. And she's also a partner. So at that table, in that moment, she is actually advantaged to have a present comment to my man Simon. And she can say, instead of Rose can do it, if Rose has got her on, she can do it. But often she does it, and then what? She's a troublemaker, she's overly sensitive, all of that, and she's already in a group that's been marginally, you know, sort of historically underrepresented, somewhat marginalized. We've got all sorts of biases out there floating around, and we're always like trying to walk like this so we can be perfect, and no one can accuse us of being overly sensitive. So really, it's really Nora, and Nora can say, Simon, I've been working with you. And this is what you come up with? Now, here's the thing. In the moment, it's very powerful. You may not be able to pull it off in the moment. You can go back to Simon and say, you know, I'm so grateful you came out to lunch with us, but I have got to explain something. Simon, do you know the impact of saying what you said? Not Simon, you idiot. Not that. Because people, none of us can really hear that. And all of us make mistakes. And so your tone has to come from the idea of how would I want someone to approach me if I was the one who made the mistake in this situation? Now, I say this is a wonderful time to practice because guess what? It's Thanksgiving coming up for most of us. And there are things said at Thanksgiving. How many people realize that while you love your grandmother, she is a bigot? How many people have had that experience? Not your personal grandmother, but I'm saying there are people who you love who traffic in ridiculous bias. And so I'm thinking Thanksgiving is a perfect place to practice interrupting, the skill I'm talking about. If you see something, say something. Like, if Uncle Joe has to go on and on about those people, I'm thinking you might say, Uncle Joe, you know, I've sat here many Thanksgivings while we went, are we still doing this? Can you update? You could just say awkward. You could say ouch, ouch for those people. I do that a lot. I just say, I don't even know who they are, but I'm like, I just know that's wrong. Like, I've seen enough pattern of insult, even when I don't know that group, I can tell it's wrong. And I just go, ouch for those people. Here's the thing. If we don't do that at our Thanksgiving table, what happens? Who's at the table? The little kids, the impressionable people. When you ask me why we haven't made more progress in this area, it's because we are not interrupting. And the kids are seeing it and hearing it. And by the way, all they need is a little affirmation for what they think they're seeing in society. Right? Society's all askew, and we need to rectify the tilt, and there are all these issues, and there are these lingering biases and all that, and it's showing up in lots of disparities. And so a little kid is reading society, and they think they know. Right? I mean, I'm not the only black person whose kid was like, I can't wait till I'm white. You're like, it's not going to happen, honey. It's just not. It's not that kind of thing. You're stuck with this, you know? Get used to it, right? So, you know, people read that. People read that it's better to be this or it's better to be that. And if you are not there interrupting that, it's going to be hard for them to break out of that. And so take some time during Thanksgiving. Yes.
So I would like to get your helpful tips.
Okay. Yes.
Ooh,
the mad thing.
Across, like,
yeah. Yes, yes. So again, I'm going to go back to this idea that to be good at this work is to be humble. And as I mentioned, I told you about the woman on the plane thing. Well, I have got, like, I started writing my book, and the editor, I said to my editor, if six of the chapters of the 25 are about how I screwed up, is that going to make me less of an expert? And he goes, no, I think people will appreciate knowing. I mean, the stories I could tell you about the things I've said wrong. And so what I try to do is I just remember that in this place, I've got it, maybe more than this other person. But there is probably, there are places where I don't have it, okay? So I don't want people to hate me because of it. I don't want people to give up on me because of it. And so I'm not going to do that for other people. What I'm going to say is, another way to say, interrupt, you can ask a question, you can make a joke, as long as it's not cynical and sarcastic, which is sometimes hard for us. You can also say, my experience is very different. You know, I've read this, or I've looked at this, or I've seen this, my experience is very different. And at least that experience is in the room. It's at the table, right? At least vying against the silence. Silence is deadly for us. Yes? Okay, thank you. She's my timer. Other thoughts. Let me just tell you two habits that I think we need to pay attention to, and I'm going to skip some slides. That's my favorite. This is of the book. You saw that. I made this book so short, and I tried to make like 25 short chapters with all with the new habits and also with the tips. I talked to you about this idea about intent and impact. That's one tip, that you've got to pay attention to both sides, because there is a cumulative negative impact on people when you are not aware of impact. The other thing about communication is that it's not about know this and don't say this and don't say that and don't say this. It's about affirmatively grasping some new information. So the two no's that I want to leave you with is, one is understanding your culture and the way your culture has shaped how you see the world, who you interact with, and who you like. And then this idea of implicit biases. Knowing your culture, I actually show this because people say to me sometimes, oh, Miss Diversity Lady, I love this, but I don't have a culture. I mean, I'm just plain. I mean, I wish I had a culture. You know, the Puerto Ricans have culture. Like, right, for the Esmeralda on there, she's going on with her culture. They're like, the Puerto Ricans have culture, and the Indians have great weddings, and, you know, they go on and on. And I'm like, honey, Ed, newsflash, everybody's got a culture. Every one of us has been shaped by a set of norms and values and beliefs and languages and terminology and geography, and all of that is shaping how we see the world. And I usually use this particular framework to say, just think of all the experiences and backgrounds and what we would call filters that we look through. And then how do we decide who is our group, and how do we decide who we like, and how do we process interactions, or when we're at work, who do we decide is smart and why? Because if you come from the East Coast, especially in New York, where I spent a lot of time, smart people talk like me, fast and loud and quick and blah, blah, blah. Other people are like, can she cut it out? Can she slow it down, right? And if you come from the South, right, but you're from the North and someone is talking in a different pace, you're like, stupid, right? We know that's a bias. We know that's a bias, right? And I'm sure that anybody who is subject to a bias learns to use the bias in their favor. Right? We all have. Women, you know, when the cop comes up, it's like, you know, you haven't renewed your registration for whatever, that's going to be a $150 fine. I'm ashamed of it, but I do say occasionally, really? My husband takes care of that. I'm going to go and tell him I can't believe he's done this. Right? All right, ma'am, I'm going to give you a warning now, but, you know, so we've all learned to take advantage of the negative biases out there. But sometimes at work, what it means is that you decide not to put that person on at the top of a matter, or you when someone says, "What about so and so?" you're like, "Yeah, I'm not really sure," you know, because you're interpreting it through your way of seeing the world, based on what your mother told you and your grandmother told you. And so that is really important for us to recognize, what is my cultural background? What are my values? What was I told about work? Was I told to go home and that family's most important? Or was I told that you must survive and you must get out of the house and that's the most important? Or was there some combination of that? Because when big CEOs stand in front of people and say, "You've got to make a decision. This is the most important thing you're going to do." Some of us come from cultures where we're like, "Is he kidding? How could this be? How could work be the most important thing? Work is not the most important thing. Family is the most..." Do you know what I'm saying? Faith is the most... So we've got to do an examination of ourselves, because we are bringing our culture to every interaction we have. In fact, we think we're not. We think we're being all meritocratic and we're communicating and in a way that's open and fair, but truthfully, we really are assessing people through these lenses. And in every room, everybody sitting around this room is bringing their culture. And that is what I'll sort of say it stands in the way often of our communication, because people are so focused on the way they do it. By the way, I got this particular picture off of Microsoft. What do you think about it? Big, yeah, yeah, what do you think? Seriously, I was like, wow, this just makes its own statement right here, right? Okay, everybody. So, one of the things that people have to recognize is their culture in the room. And what I mean by that is, I was with a colleague of mine, and she and I were in the Wall Street area in New York, and we were getting out of a cab. It was late at night. There was nobody on the street because, you know, it's Wall Street. And what happens is, he says, the cab driver's like, "Oh, you guys have to get out now, because I'm not going to go all the way to the hotel because there's too much construction. You'll get there much more quickly if you walk." So we're out there. It's late. We, you know, it's nowhere. We don't know what's going on. And I see this person cross the street, and I'm immediately relieved. And so I'm like, oh, great. My colleague, who is a woman like me, she's an ex-lawyer, she's Asian, woman of color, blah, blah, blah. She goes, "Oh, that's interesting. The person I saw across the street was a black guy." And I was like, yay, black guy, we don't know where we're going. Can you help us? That's my worldview. I don't know where I got it from, but my feeling is, hey, you know what? My lens is, if you're lost and you need some help, a black guy is going to help you out. She's like, oh, that's really interesting, because you were going, yay, black guy. And I was going, ooh, black guy, right? Right? And so, and she's like, I feel so bad. I'm a diversity person, and I'm a woman of color, and I get the black guy thing, and I'm so pumped about that. I was like, girl, no blame, shame, or attack, okay? Let's calm down. I go way back with black guys. You know what I'm saying? My father is a black guy. My son, I have a 6'5", super beautiful black guy son. I was married to a black guy. I went out with a lot of black guys. What happens is, I did the same thing that she did. I sorted through my lenses. It's just that we have different lenses. That's all. It's not like, oh, I was so special and she was so bad. It was just like, hey, Mr. Black Guy. He was our black guy, actually. He said, yes, ladies, I know where you're going, and I'll take you there. And she was like, whoa. I'm like, I'm telling you, it's my black guy. So if we had been by ourselves, I would have moved to him, and I would have confirmed my worldview about black guys. If she was hadn't been with me, she would have walked away and probably kept intact her view about black guys. So we are, here's another tip. When you're talking about your background, what do we have, 10 or 5? Okay. When we're talking about our background, speak your lens. Say, as a baby boomer, this is how I feel. As a woman of color, this is how I see it. As a person who has a disability, this is how I think about it. Why? Because then at least you're making room for conversation. You're saying, I don't see the whole world. I just see my peculiar, unique view of it. As a woman from the South, as a person who is first generation, any of those things help to make it clear that you understand there's more to learn. So, that's another powerful thing The other thing, as I said earlier today, it's not about perfection, it's about connection. And one of the things that I did not get to do is to talk a little bit about some of the biases that I see that are implicit. So I just wanted to reinforce those things. In fact, I wonder if I said this. Yeah, I did. Know your biases. And I just want to go with this. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Guys, seriously, we have got to get out of denial. In fact, let's go back to the black church. Are you ready? You are going to repeat after me. I have biases. Are you ready? I have biases. It's okay, guys. Seriously. You're human. The problem is that when you deny you have biases, you can't do anything about the things you don't have. If you do pay attention and you do know you have biases, then you can start to counteract them. So when you're talking to a person and you decide you already know who that person is, you're like, hey, how you doing? So you're from the South, so you must wear whatever. You're like, why are you talking to me like that? You don't know me. You've got a group concept, and now you're loading your statements with your bias. Or watch your compliments, by the way, because this is something we call micro inequities, right? Where people are like, you got four children. Wow, you do well for a woman with four children. Right? Right in the evaluations. For a woman with four children, she gets a lot done. You're like, excuse me, well, what was the assumption you were starting with? Or I had a girlfriend who was a black woman who was just taking over an agency, and she was being introduced to her board, and they read all of her, you know, bio and accolades or whatever, and a white man leaned over to her and he said, you know, if you don't never do another thing, you've done a lot for a black girl. Ouch! Watch your compliments, people, because inside of them is a negative starting position. And so she said, yes. You can't, I don't know if you can avoid the ouch, because I said, you've got this person over here and they got their whole history, they got the whole background. He's trying to give her a welcome message. So what she said, what she wanted to say was, well, for a white guy, you're not that impressive, but she did what we all do, which is to smile, because in every situation, and said thank you or something, in every situation you can't correct. But it did cause her to wonder, where am I now? Yes, and what am I going to have to deal with? Now, you can get proactive. If you think that there is a person who is going to be constantly assessing you through a negative stereotype, you can begin to try to create a relationship with that person. You can also create a relationship with someone who has influence with that person and begin to talk about what you are concerned about and what you would like help with. Again, I don't think we should dismiss people. We make assumptions ourselves about who can help and who is interested in our success, and sometimes we're very wrong about that. And we miss opportunities to cultivate really powerful, useful information. If you want to learn more about your biases, there's a great test online. It's called implicit.harvard.edu. And by the way, I'm on Twitter at Renee Myers, and I'm always putting out like studies and things that you can do and to look at so that you know more about your biases. 14 different tests you can take on various categories, and it's really quite interesting. You know, there's an age test where you say, do you like old people, and you like young people, and our explicit views are, oh, they're all great, old people, young people. The test after millions of people suggests, we don't like old people. We don't like them. And so one of the things I want to do is to say you have to avoid the micro inequities because they're cumulative. People are like, what's the big deal? I just said the small thing. But lots of people have said that small thing. Lots of people have not recognized you as the person who is running the show, but have decided that you are a person who is on the staff or a person who looks like the person who was in the same group as racially that left the company 2 years ago. So there are lots of ways that people are accumulating these sort of implicit negative impacts. And therefore, here's the test. That's the example of what the test looks like. So, small moves matter. Just like small insults are a problem, small moves make a difference. Like today, while you're out here and you're meeting people, say hello. Ask what people's names are. If you can't get their name right, ask them to help you. Or, you know, if it's at work, you know, just call their voicemail late at night and hear how they pronounce their own name. Spend time in places where your dominant identity is in the minority. Big tip. Make yourself a minority. Because when you get a chance to be around a group where you are not in charge, and when there is an enormous group of those individuals, you get to see just how much diversity is in a group that you thought of as very homogeneous. You get to understand that there are all sorts of differences within the same group, and you get to feel uncomfortable. And you get to not be in charge. By the way, if you go, like if you're a man and you're going to a woman's thing, if you're straight and you're going to a lesbian's thing, whatever, don't go in there with your big old, like, majority status self, taking up a lot of space. Well, that's really interesting. Why do you say that? Just go in respectful, quiet, listening, looking to learn. Learn to unthreatening ways to solicit different views. So that means that you might decide to poll a group. I don't know if people know about the Harvard experiment, but, you know, they just started looking at differences in all the professors, the Harvard Business School. They just asked professors to pay attention to who they were calling on. And just by asking the professors to pay attention, all of a sudden, women started getting called on more. And in Harvard Business School, your class grade is impacted by your class participation. So sometimes it's to look at who you're calling on. It might be make sure that you rotate around the room and ask for responses so everybody has to answer. It's not just about initiation by individuals. You might decide to do things offline with people. Like, you know, they've got thoughts, but they haven't expressed them in a meeting. Then you go inside and say, you know, Zelda, I think you have a lot going on. Do you want to speak more? Or I'm going to have the client come in, and this is what I would like you to say. Do you want to rehearse it? Because some people's cultural backgrounds just don't allow them to feel comfortable to be out and boasting and being the smartest person in the room. Doesn't mean they're not the smartest person in the room. How do you solicit those views? Share information widely, and also, if you want to avoid in-group favoritism, which is that you like your own group, the only way to do that is to rotate opportunity so that you decide to look at the whole list of people who could have an opportunity instead of just going with your mental list, because your mental list is corrupt with biases, okay? So one of the things we want to do with in-group favoritism, even today, when you see yourself starting moving towards people who you know you can finish their sentences, you know what TV shows they watch, you know, you can talk about Scandal all day long. You might want to go to the people who watch The Walking Dead. You know, I just want to, those are lots of possibilities. And also, if you know someone might be suffering from some bias, speak out about what they are capable of doing, and watch out for those who are underrepresented. As I said today, we have gone as far as we can being colorblind, being difference blind. The move now is to be difference conscious, conscientious, and competent, because then you are going to be able to look and see who isn't there, who could be there, ways that we are missing, and ways that we can evolve. So I am going to ask you in the no shame environment, again, to reach out, connect, don't worry about saying the wrong thing, be prepared to hear an ouch, move in and get curious, and keep on growing, because we need women to not only worry about the biases that they receive, we've got to be good to each other. That's the last thing I'm gonna say. Women are not necessarily treating themselves, each other, as well as they should. We are often critical, more critical than we are of men. We are taking care sometimes of men not in the same way that we are with women. We are jealous, we are contentious, we are competitive. Stop it. We come in every background, in every color, in every complexion, in every religion, in every political affiliation. We have to learn to embrace that difference in one another. If we do that, then We have the ability to be connected, to be powerful, and to reach all sorts of possibilities. Communicate, and we will be better, all of us, for it. So thank you so much. Come buy the book. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Much. Much.